Hey everybody, Brad Stevens here, founder and CEO of Outsource Access. We help companies redefine how they scale with offshore affordable staff from the Philippines. Congrats to all fellow winners of the 2023 Real Leaders Impact Awards. We are proud to be among you. About 10 years ago, I woke up to a major growth problem in my last business. Cash was tight, staff was overwhelmed, and tasks were not getting done. Then I discovered the world of offshore virtual staff in the Philippines, where English is their second language, so there is no communication or culture gap. I realized outsourcing wasn't just call centers, it was access to college-educated Filipinos to support sales, marketing, operations, customer service, bookkeeping, personal tasks, and more. And in fact, the first woman I hired in the Philippines at 23 is now an award-winning COO of our entire company. It inspired me to launch Outsource Access. One client and YPO member, Ali Jamal, shared their offshore virtual staff Edison automated processes and saved them over $50,000 per year in the first few weeks. It's about finally getting things done and staff focusing on higher value activities. We've grown by over 2,000% in just 3.5 years and will double next year. To receive a complimentary outsourcing playbook customized for your industry and to connect with one of our team here at Outsource Access, just visit redefinescale.com. That's redefinescale.com or text the word scale to 770-954-8440. 2 months after hiring my first staff, she sent me a picture of shoes she bought for low-income children because of the opportunity. And now we support thousands of families and the environment with United Nations SDG projects. I'm proud we've grown with impact. To learn more, visit redefinescale.com.
Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real. In 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, welcome, good people, to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Edwards, and joining us today, folks, we've got Maria Colacurcio, the CEO at Syndio. Maria, how are you doing today?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me today.
Of course. Are you on the go? Are you on the run?
I'm always on the go. No, I'm actually standing today, though. Not sitting.
Good for you. You know, I got a standing desk. I used it like the first week when I got it. I was like, this is the best thing ever. And I feel like I never use it anymore.
You just sit. Sitting's the new smoking, you know.
Is it? Oh, geez.
It is.
You put it that way, I gotta kind of quit today. Maybe I'll stand up during the episode. Well, Maria, I appreciate you coming on. Of course, we're not here to talk about staying desk. We're here to talk about the real Maria Colacurcio. And the way I'd like to start this episode is I'd like you to think about an experience. I'd like you to think about a time that made this company what it is today. It could be some adversity. It may be a fun time. What's that early experience when I ask that question that resonates with you?
There's so many, especially in light of a number that we just got, which has a big, big impact on every single one of our employees because it has to do with our mission. So over the past week, one of the things we do is we track our impact. So because we're a workplace equity analytics platform, we let companies analyze and resolve their pay and opportunity gaps that could be because of something like gender, race, or ethnicity. And we discovered that as of this month, we've put $160 million back in the pockets of people that weren't getting it because of something like gender or race. And the reason I bring that up is because one of the most impactful moments in the early days was us sitting around trying to figure out, what do we want to be? And how do we want to change the world? And what is the metric or number that we can use to hold ourselves accountable to whether we're achieving that mission and that goal? And that's when we came up with this target of how many dollars are we actually giving back to people? And how on earth will we be able to track that over time? So I think it's a really important moment. It's kind of a boring one, but it has to do with how do leaders hold themselves accountable to what they say are their values and really the mission of the company. Because as you grow and scale, if you don't have a way to hold yourself accountable to that, that's numerical, that has a metric that has some sort of KPI associated with it, it's really easy to get off track. It's easy to get distracted. It's easy to go chase shiny squirrels with glowing tails, as we sometimes call them. And so I think it's important from the very earliest days to figure out, what do we want to be and how are we going to make sure that we don't get off track?
So for people listening to this right now, Maria, they're hearing like, wait, what? This person's talking about impact. Are they, is this legal? Is this a company? What do you mean they're trying to make an impact? I'm just trying to get to the bottom of this question. The question everyone's asking right now is to you, Maria, like, what is the purpose of capitalism right now? What's the purpose of your company?
Yeah, so the purpose of our company is to close the wealth gap. So right now, like it or not, there's still a huge disparity. And while it's not illegal to pay people differently, you have to have good reasons why you do that. So some companies say they pay for tenure, time and role, or education, or a certain set of hot skills or particular experiences that really parlay themselves into high performance for a company. All of those things are just fine. But on the flip side of that, a lot of companies are still finding themselves to have disparities that are because of something like gender or race. So the pay gap is still very real. And what's great is that now there's technology to solve that. So that's really for us what our whole mission is about and why I opened and started with, what's that metric? As a leader, you are constantly on the hook to be storytelling, to be inspiring your people, to be making sure that you're taking your employees and your company on a journey. But in order to get folks on board, you can't just be hammering toward ARR, toward customer retention, toward all the things to which we're held accountable. You have to be telling them a story that's authentic and real and that ties to your reason for being. So for me, that's where every single all hands starts. That's where every single meeting with my leadership team starts. It starts back at the beginning, which is, why do we exist? What's our reason for being? And what do we ultimately want our impact to be?
I love that. You're a visionary. Tell me a little bit more about the vision that you've had. Obviously, I know the purpose of the company. I know the impact that it's just generated $160 million now going back to people who otherwise would not receive this beforehand. What's the vision? What's the story? Tell me what makes a good story and a good vision to you.
Yeah, I think a good vision and a good story is something that brings people along, something that makes every person feel like they're a valuable part of a winning team on an inspired mission. So each one of those things at certain times in the trajectory of a company, certainly when I was out raising my Series A and having a tremendous number of doors slammed in my face, it was difficult to land the middle part, which is you're part of a winning team. I could still tell the story around we're on an inspired mission, but that winning team part is a difficult thing to inspire your people around when every single day you're out in the field getting doors slammed in your face by VCs and funders saying, we're not going to invest in you. So I think it's really up to the leader to figure out, how do I take a positive and optimistic spin on what I'm learning from these failures in order to ensure my people are still bought in, they're still inspired, they're still in this with me?
Because that can be demotivating, right? Not just for you, but that could trickle throughout the rest of the team. What are some of those strategies or those ways that you can flip your mindset? How do you practice getting in a good mindset? What does Maria do?
So for me, I'm all about movement. So I have to move. I have to move every day. It's a huge thing for me personally. And it may be the way that I just slam the cortisol through my system and process it and am done with it. But I think workouts are a big way for me to manage stress and just manage that anxiety and push through it so that when I come to the team, I'm at least in a stable frame of mind for me. And it's different for everybody. But I do think you have to constantly push yourself to turn things inside out and upside down until you can find an optimistic point of view. And I'm not trying to be Pollyanna. We're in a very difficult economic time right now. There's a lot of volatility. There's a ton of layoffs. But I think one thing that I go back to over and over again is, you know, at the beginning of COVID, for example, there were a lot of companies that didn't anticipate the upside. They didn't anticipate the unintended benefits that were going to come, particularly for cloud companies, they ended up pushing the envelope too far, potentially hiring too many people to lean into those upsides. But no one anticipated when the news first broke that there was going to be this unintended upside. A lot of news media found this. You know, at first they were thinking, well, nobody's coming to the office, we're in trouble. But then when we got into it a little bit more, people were voraciously interested in reading because they had so much time on their hands. So a lot of these publications that had been somewhat dormant saw this upside in subscribers, this upside in people coming to them for more information. So I think as leaders, it's really incumbent upon us in tough times to turn it over inside out, upside down, think of innovation, how we can apply it to the situation and come up with an optimistic point of view. I think optimism is the superpower of leaders, particularly during times of volatility and uncertainty.
You know, I love what you're saying. I love every single part of what you're saying. It's giving me energy to go throughout my day. And I hate it. I hate it when I miss a workout or something like that and the whole day is just thrown off because the cortisol levels are so high. The stress is built up. So I'm very happy that you're doing that. One of the stories I wanted to tell that I guess what you reminded me of is I think it's Dick Fosberg, I want to say is his name. I'm sorry, I'm butchering that for all the track fans out there. But he's the first person to go over the high jump backwards. Previously, everyone scissored it, right? It was kind of a forward jump, but just a one little change that was just like, of course, this is the way to do it. Made him a gold medal winner. Of course, it's been repeated time and time again. So did you have a moment like that where it was like, man, this is just a little simple change. Maybe it was positivity, maybe it was something else that made all the difference in how you operate your business.
Absolutely, and I think it's, number one, how you think about failure. Is failure a way to gain confidence and courage to be more bold, or is failure simply failure? And I think when you change your mindset to see every failure as an opportunity to, again, practice that muscle of being bold and learning and gaining confidence, you now have created this really interesting feedback loop that if you can embed that mentality into your team, you've just cracked open a huge opportunity for innovation. Because being bold and having courage, particularly in a growth stage startup, is crucial. And if people are afraid to fail, if they're too afraid of taking risks because they don't want to fail, what that does is it also limits and dampens their confidence. The way to gain more confidence, and I think it's a little bit, it's not intuitive, but the way to gain confidence is to say, I tried that, it didn't work, but here's what I learned. I'm gonna tweak that, I'm gonna try again, I'm gonna be bold, I'm gonna take another risk. And when that does work, your confidence goes through the roof. And now you've got courage to continue that cycle over and over again. So I think it really, for me, the unlock was failure's not failure. As long as you learn from it, we're really big at Syndio on postmortems. And I think postmortems, even if they're 15 minutes, keep them quick, keep them high and tight, but make sure that you set up an absolute mentality of learning from failure, learning from past experiences, so that you can start to build that courage and confidence loop with your teams.
I love that. That's powerful. And looking at this through a leadership lens, Maria, if you had to attribute a few of the factors that have led to the growth of your organization, what would some of those factors be that are not switching it from failure to a learning lesson?
Yeah, I think the first thing is we don't overemphasize research. And it sounds kind of crazy, but what does that mean? It means we've made a really consistent and intentional effort to hire thought leaders and subject matter experts within our company. So everyone from our founder, he's a PhD, JD, data scientist, and he knows our space better than anyone. From there, we went out and hired the head of global employment law from Starbucks. And his first job with our company was to run sales. One of the things my board said to me was, "You're putting a lawyer in charge of sales? Is that the smartest thing?" And I said, "It is, because he's actually the buyer. He's the buyer of what we're selling at Starbucks. He's been leading the pay equity initiative there for 13 years. Who better to go out and tell the story than someone who's been the consumer of it? We hired Katie Badero, who's now my chief revenue officer. She came in to run customer success. She was a trained labor economist. More recently, we hired a woman named Christine Hendrickson, who was the preeminent pay equity expert at Seyfarth Shaw. She is now one of our strategic thought leaders and does a ton of writing and press for us. So, long story short, when you have this huge muscle of thought leadership and expertise in your company, you now have to trust it. So when we make calls about where the product's going or where the market's going, instead of spending 6, 8, 12 months trying to gather and garner market research, we listen to the team that we have and we listen to our customers. And our customers, combined with our strategic thought leaders and subject matter expertise in-house, they lead us in the right direction. And this is consistent. It's happened over and over again where we've made certain bets or calls and we've said, you know, we're starting to see this unadjusted pay gap thing come up more and more. And we start to build product around it. And 4 months later, we'll see legislation like SB 1162 in California, their pay transparency legislation, embedded within that was a mean, median, gap reporting requirement. So I think it's really about trust. It's about surrounding yourself with the right level of expertise, listening to your customers, and then making some calls that feel a little uncomfortable, but that keep you ahead of the game.
I love that. And yeah, hiring a lawyer in any business situation is always a risk, right? I'm curious to learn a little bit more about the traction that you've, experienced with Syndio. A lot of entrepreneurs that kind of go from this push strategy where they're making all the calls and then eventually it starts to be a pull strategy over time. What's been working for you guys?
It's funny that you use the word traction. I just had a session with my team a couple of months ago where I likened it to this fitness race that I've been competing in. There's this crazy fitness race called Hyrox, and I've been competing in it pretty consistently over the past year. And I found it really invigorating for a lot of reasons. But I came to the team and I said, listen, here's what I learned from a past failure. So I had just competed, and there was one particular event where you have to pull this really heavy sled. And I had not done the right training to be able to do that particular obstacle with the level of speed that I needed to. And it ended up derailing my entire race, even though everything else was really sort of perfectly honed. And I was ready and peaked for the rest of the race. That one absolutely torpedoed me. So I went to the team and I said, here's what I'm doing. I'm looking at my training schedule. I'm looking at how I'm balancing my load. I'm looking at my strength versus my speed. And I'm making edits. I'm making adjustments on how I'm training so that I can achieve better results the next time. And so that word traction, I think, is really interesting because we're really good at traction at Syndio. And I think companies generally are in our size and stage. So if you think about press, we get a lot of tier one media. That's great traction. That is great traction. It's great brand awareness. It's great for our brand. It's great for our company to be known. But until you take that traction and do something with it to convert it into a result, it doesn't matter. So I could be doing all sorts of exercises that I think are going to help me in this one particular obstacle or event. But until it translates into an actual race where I perform, it's just traction. It's just noise. It's just busy work and movement. So my big thing for the team is always think about what you're doing. And if you're generating a lot of energy and traction and noise and sort of stuff, you have to think about then, what do I need to execute to get to the result?
I like that. Yeah. Ways to prioritize what you want to do to achieve the result, doing things that are in alignment with the strategy. I think that's really interesting and powerful. A lot of the things that you've been talking about today, Maria, have been around vision, thinking long term, thinking in the future, thinking bigger, like you just mentioned. How far out are you thinking, and what do you think your role is as a CEO?
I think the role of the CEO is to always be thinking 3 to 5 years out. I have an incredible partner in my CTO. I don't think it's traditional for a CTO to take this role, but sometimes it is, in that he is exceptional in thinking about the midterm. He thinks really strategically and creatively about what we need to do in the next 12 to 18 months to really succeed in the next phase of our product development. And you've got to find someone complementary to yourself in terms of how to break that down. Because if I was just focused on the 3 to 5 year vision and I didn't have anyone filling that hole of the 12 to 18 months, we would be in a world of hurt. So I really believe it's the job of the CEO to be thinking 3 to 5 years out. You should be thinking about that strategy before anybody asks you about it, before you're in front of an investor who wants you to give them a pitch. That should be completely baked in your head. But you've got to surround yourself with great people that are also thinking about the near term. Because when a company is in its infancy, everybody's thinking about both. Because in order to figure out what you should build or what you should build next, you have to be thinking about the here and now, what's going to sell, what's going to have product market fit, and also how do we avoid some of the pitfalls of having too small a total addressable market, or being too much of a niche, or having something where we can get in and sell it, but we can't expand, or maybe the market size is too small or too specialized, or it's not recession proof. You've got to be thinking about all of those things. So as you grow and scale, you have to scale the nature of your team to think short, medium, and long term as well.
That's really interesting. I've never heard that before. And just out of curiosity, Maria, if you had a pie chart, kind of think about your day, where would you say you spend most of your time?
It completely depends on what the leadership team looks like. So as an example, in November, I hired my first full-time CFO at Syndio. So before that, we had a fractional CFO who was a contractor, wonderful human, huge source and resource for us in the early days. But I was doing a lot of what you would imagine is operational finance work, like standing up the guts of the business, figuring out what are the metrics we should be tracking, how are we doing against those metrics. And then once I got a CFO on board, it really unlocked me to start being a little more external facing. So looking outside of the company and making sure that we're out there promoting our brand and that Syndio is seen as the thought leader and the expert partner to our customers. So today, because I've got that seat filled, I'm doing a lot more with customers. I'm going and meeting with customers in person. I'm hearing what's going on with them. I'm making sure that we're being a good partner to them in every sense of the word. I'm hearing what they're thinking about in terms of the next, you know, year. What problems are they trying to solve? Because all of those external inputs, a good CEO will synthesize those messages, and that's how you create your 3 to 5 year vision and strategy. It's not in a vacuum. It's not just on your own in your own head. You have to be out in the field. You have to be talking to investors, customers, prospects. You've got to be talking to your competitors. You've got to be talking to your partners. And in order to create that vision that's really going to work, it's by taking all those inputs and synthesizing them. So that's where I'm spending my time today.
I love this, Maria. Well, we said we were going to talk about movement today. And, you know, I think you said, hey, you got to stand up now. I'm not just going to stand up. I'm going to run through a wall after this episode. That's how fired up I am. I appreciate you coming on the Relius podcast today. Let's bring this home, Maria. And all of this, what is your definition of a real leader?
I think a real leader is somebody that sees potential in people and they help their people reach that potential. And part of that is letting people fail, but not letting people become a failure. And I think it was McChrystal that said that quite famously. So it's about letting people reach and helping them reach their highest potential and making sure they understand that to build courage and confidence, part of that journey is going to include failure.
I love that. For Maria Colacurcio, I'm Kevin Edwards asking you to go out there and always, folks, keep it real. Thanks, Maria. Hey, ReLeaders, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to ReLeaders.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a real leader, and always keep it real.